So I think it's safe to say that those were the Vegas Golden Knights we are so used to seeing. Welcome to Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Brian Burke and Justin Bourne. Elliot Friedman from the NHL on Sportsnet. Hockey Night in 31 Thoughts drops by here in a few minutes. Guys, we'll get to this evening's matchup. But about last night, Vegas comes back. They win 3-0. Robin Lehner with a shutout. Wash, rinse, repeat. He's turned into the shutout machine in these playoffs. Series now tied at ones. The second period was the story. Stastny, Carlson, and Tomáš Noshek with the goals. 3-0 is the final, to which Brian Burke says what?
That's the team I thought I'd see. I'm not surprised in the least bit. And I still like Vegas going forward. I think they're going to win the series.
Justin, wide brush on last night.
It was more like it, right? I mean, just in terms of the game in general, too, it was a little bit better hockey game, better pace from both sides. You know, Vegas got good goaltending. We saw some complete team play. Ryan Reeves stirring the pot a little bit. It was like that was a little bit more, as Berkey said, you know, to what we expected to see. Not a great thing if you're a fan of the Stars that Dallas loses 3-0 and go, that's what we expected to see. But to be honest, it all it did seem, you know, to plan, I guess, last night for Vegas.
The quotes after the games are usually interesting. I know there's a lot of cliches you have to wade through, but usually if you mine deep enough, you can find something. And after game one, Peter DeBoer, head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights, said, quote, "We didn't work hard enough." And then last night, Joe Pavelski of the Dallas Stars says, quote, "We got what we deserved." Berkey, we'll start with you. Are both of these statements accurate about both of these games?
For sure, for game one, Pete DeBoer's comment for sure is accurate. I thought last night Dallas worked at times, but not as consistently as Vegas, and not they didn't execute. They weren't as sharp. So I would say, I'd say both accurate. Pete DeBoer's comment after game one was clearly a sweat issue in game one for me. Mm-hmm. So when I talk about a team's effort, I talk about the sweat issue. And they didn't work near hard enough. I don't know what they were watching. I don't know if they missed Ryan Reeves. I don't know if a 7-game series against Vancouver took a lot out of them. But they weren't ready to play. And they did not deserve to win. They got what they deserved. They didn't work hard enough. They got outplayed badly. But last night, to me, the margin of, like Bourne says, is a good game. The margin wasn't as wide as in game one for me in terms of work effort and chances and everything else. But It's clear that if both teams play their best game, in my mind, Vegas wins.
Just like where are these goals supposed to come from for a Dallas Stars team? You know, like Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn, just, you know, they are the best offensive players on that team, you know, in theory. But, boy, we just don't see it very often. And lately, as the games have gotten harder and thicker, it just doesn't seem like they're creating a ton of opportunities for that Stars team.
3-0 Vegas. And, you know, someone that we probably haven't talked enough about here, certainly on this program, is Shea Theodore. Who was picked up in the expansion draft, played a handful of games with Chicago Wolves. That was probably just, you know, protecting the roster until he became a full-timer with the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm still a little bit, I get, you know, analysis is all, you know, retrospective analysis, hindsight is 20/20, that Anaheim chose to expose Theodore to protect Josh Manson. I think Theodore is looking like one of the elite members of any blue line in the NHL right now. And last night, Berkey, there's Shea Theodore in the middle of all of this. Give us your thoughts, your observations, you know, on this defenseman that, you know, we talk about coming out parties and everyone's going crazy for, you know, players like, you know, Miro Heiskanen on the Dallas side. What about Theodore on Vegas?
Well, I frankly, the people I talk to in pro hockey are amazed at how far this kid has progressed. Even people that liked him in his draft year, they're like, look, he's way better. And good for him. This is a compliment. But I think it's easy to criticize Anaheim for letting him go when they had to keep, you know, Vatanen, and they had all these good young defensemen. And so I think that Hampus Lindholm, that group, mm-hmm. and so they exposed Theodore. At the time, nobody said this is a glaring error. This is a huge mistake. So they trade him, so they keep the other guys. He's better than they thought he was, obviously, or they would have kept him. But he's better than everyone else in the hockey world thought he was, too. And that's credit to him, to Shea. But he's been magnificent. Like, his vision and his creativity, he's terrific.
You know, as you bring Elliot Friedman into the conversation from 31 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada, and you were making the point last night about Shea Theodore and Team Canada, Olympics. You know, Brian's talked about Blake Wheeler before being, you know, the most improved player in the NHL. Friedge, can we say the same thing about Shea Theodore from where he was when he was drafted out of the Western League to toiling in the minors with the Anaheim organization to a start with Vegas that saw him in Chicago with Rocky Thompson's outfit to becoming now a star with the Vegas Golden Knights? Is he one of, or maybe the most improved player in the NHL?
Well, I mean, if you take a look at it, Jeff, I mean, would you argue that maybe Braden Point is the guy?
Yes, you can make that observation, absolutely.
Or now, is thanks to you, my new nickname for him, Force Plate Point.
Hornet's nest there, I know, it's a little bit of a hornet's nest.
So wait a sec, so did you talk to Berkey and Justin about what you did the other night?
No, we haven't had a chance to discuss that. It hasn't come up.
Well,
we haven't talked about Point.
I think you should explain.
You want to do
I
it? Okay, so... Should, yeah. Okay, so here's the story, guys. And before anyone asks, I am not going to say who the team is. So, as Elliot chuckles. So, the other night when Tampa is just romping over the New York Islanders, John Shannon puts out a tweet that indicates that, hey, you know, don't forget, here's a guy that was drafted in the third round. That was the Philadelphia draft, the Ekblad draft. Also in that draft, the David Pastrnak goes in the 20s. Leon Draisaitl goes third overall to the Edmonton Oilers. And so I retweet that with a comment and say, I'll go you one better. There was also a team that passed on him because of his force plate results at the combine. And the feeling was from this one team, if your force plate results at the combine aren't good, you will never be an elite level athlete. And apparently that kicked up a hornet's nest with some people in the NHL.
Oh, yeah?
I got a text the next morning saying there's a team that wants to know how that information got out.
I love it. I love the insider world you guys live in.
Now, but, like, this is up to Merrick, so you got to decide if you're going to do anything with this, Jeffy.
No, this one will stay where it is. This one will remain part of folklore. If that team wants to say who they are, then we can provide them with a platform here on the radio or on our podcast for each. But
I wanted to say,
I was going to say, this wasn't like. Listen, Tampa had other chances to grab Braden Point as well.
Yes.
Like, every team had a chance to get this guy. So I just found unique, you know, that one specific. Because we've heard, you know, teams pass on players before for some interesting reasons. Sometimes, you know, teams don't want players of a certain nationality because they've had history with players from that nationality. Sometimes teams don't want to draft players that are represented by a certain agent or a certain agency. I just found that this one was a pretty unique justification for passing over Braden Point.
Well, you know, the other thing too is, Jeff, like, I actually did some reading on force plates and pressure mapping because of your tweet. I didn't know a lot about it, so I found it was interesting. Like, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of places that this whole conversation goes. Like, first of all, I'm reading the book right now about the Patriots, like a really good look inside their dynasty. And it's not in this particular book, but I've always admired, like, Bill Belichick gets credit for drafting Tom Brady late. And his general response to that is, oh, yeah, if I was so smart, I would have drafted him earlier, which I think is the right answer. I really like that. And, you know, I think also when it comes to Point, you know, it's funny. I was talking about, I was talking about what you tweeted with someone yesterday who works for a team. And he told me that they had one player they liked. They took in a draft, like a later round try. And the player was not tall, but his parents were tall. And, you know, they said, well, you know, like we got to think we're getting a growth spurt here. And it never happened. But it was one of the bets they took because they liked the talent of the player. They thought he needed, you know, a bit more size. The player didn't make it, and it wasn't because, you know, it just didn't work. But he said that that's one of the things that they did was they looked at the size of the parents and they said, we think we get a growth spurt here, and we think this player with a bit more size and his skill could really work. It didn't, but these decisions do get made all the time because drafting, like, look, Point went 79th, he's now one of the best players in the league. Panarin went undrafted, what, twice, and he's now one of the best players in the league. Like, you know, it's drafting 18, 19-year-olds, it's such an imperfect science that I'm not surprised that people try things like this to try to make it, you know, try to handicap it a little bit better.
I remember talking to one trainer about Combine, not about Force Plate specifically, but about the entire event, the entire Combine itself. And I said, you know, what of value, you know, as a trainer, do you look for in this, in all these series of exercises and tests that the players are going through? And he said to me, the one area that I'm most interested in is how much information can I take out of a Combine which allows me to see where a player has a sort of predisposition for injury. Are the hips firing at 100%? Is this shoulder going to be an issue somewhere down the road? He said, that to me, if I'm a team, that's where I glean the most amount of information. Let's ask the GM here on the show the question. What, Berkey, as we sort of sidetrack here, Berkey, what type of information out of the Combine was most valuable to you as a general manager? I think we've lost Brian.
Am I back?
Oh, yeah, there you go. You're back.
Oh, good. So I'm still on the show. I thought you and Elliot were going to chat this drivel for an hour.
Well, you know, why wouldn't we want to entertain people for a change?
Yeah, well, the reason you didn't hear me just now is I fell asleep listening to you two. No, so on the Combine, like, I despise saying these words on the air, but I agree with most of what Elliot just said. The issue with the Combine is the physical stuff is clearly useful, effort, attitude. There's a lot that comes out of it. What I don't like are the interviews at the Combine because they're so well coached by then. You know, who's your hero? My dad. Who's your hero? My older brother. Who's your hero? Clark Gillies. You know, like, it's an answer that can't be wrong, because he's been told to give that answer. You know, but I think the Combine has value. I like watching the kids work out. When I was a GM, I'd watch part of that. I sat in on the interviews. Yeah, some of them are distinctive. Like Gabriel Landeskog he blew the whole thing away. And So I think it has value. And I think the league was right to punish Arizona severely for doing testing. I think it has great value. Some of the kids are fantastic in how hard they work and puking after the VO2 max test. And I think it's become a great part of the fabric leading up to the draft.
That puking, by the way, VO2 max, there's a great story about Theo Peckham, who may have been the first one to do it. And then all the teams looked and said, wow, look how hard this guy works. Look how hard this guy pushes himself when he actually raised his draft stock. And then what we found is at subsequent combines, agents were telling their clients to work so hard, like almost forced themselves to vomit because it helped Theo Peckham. Now, if you have to vomit, you can't do it publicly. There's like a curtained off area where if the guys are going to be sick, they have to actually go. Borny, go ahead.
Vomit corner.
Yeah, yes. I've definitely thrown up after a VO2 test. That's it's like a badge of honor. People are like, all right, that guy tried really hard. We like that player. It's you know what's interesting about this conversation is like baseball has some sort of neurocognitive testing where they actually have like a video game involvement and can test how like players' reaction times. And I know just working a little bit with Dubas, he was curious to see where it would go in terms of, you know, psychology testing for these players and something like that, testing how quick a player's brain works. I don't know what the ethical implications are for all this, but it is fascinating to see. Do you think it'll move farther than where it is right now, Elliot?
Oh, I definitely think that teams are looking at that kind of stuff all the time. I know that, you know, for example, you know, Arizona, even before this year, one of the things they tried last year that I know surprised some players was they brought video to their meetings and, like, where plays weren't, you know, either worked or didn't work, and they asked the players to explain what they were thinking. And some of the players were taken aback. I believe some players were like, well, Arizona's not taking me because I don't think I'm very smart. It's, you know, these kinds of things, there's more and more of this stuff is happening. I think it happens more, Justin, when you get a player, because you're limited in how much time you can really talk to someone at the combine. So I think now it's more when, okay, you get a player into your system, then you start testing them more on stuff like that or hooking them up to stuff more like that. I think we're going to see that more and more.
With Elliot Friedman from 31 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada, let's try this again. I'll do it a different way. You talked about Shea Theodore and Team Canada last night. Do you have a follow-up on Shea Theodore, who we probably don't talk enough about, certainly on this broadcast?
Well, I just think that, Jeff, like, there's, you know, there. You look at the top defensemen in the league, and I don't know if sea change is the right word, but, you know, we're starting, you know, when you talk about, you know, the Norris Trophy, you talk a lot about, you know, Victor Hedman, and for good reason. And obviously this year, I think it's going to be Josi or Carlson. But there's a new generation of guys coming, right? Like, you know, there's Seth Jones, and he's sort of been on the cusp for a while. But, you know, I don't think what happened this year has hurt him. There's Haskinen, who is 3 points away for the most points by a defenseman in the playoffs in 25 years. There's Theodore, obviously, who had a big night last night, and seems to have a big night every night. Like, there's the new generation of guys, looks like they're coming. And then we've got Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes, too. So, you know, I think there's this group now that's pushing up, and they're going to start being in the Norris conversation. And you know how it kind of works in this league, right? You almost kind of need, like, that big performance on a high pressure stage that kind of puts you into the awards conversation, and all of these guys are having it now.
So what you're saying is expect the Norris to stay in the West for a while,
unless Seth Jones starts winning it. But then like the way Hedman's going, like, he's won once. Like, I joked with Kevin, like, Kevin says, like, he's kind of an unknown, and I said to Kevin the other night, like, are Lightning games not on in California? Like, he's won one Norris. He's been a finalist 5 times. Like, and he says, I still think he's underappreciated. So Hedman could win it more. But yes, I mean, you're seeing, like, these guys, Makar, Hughes, Haskinen, Theodore, they're Western guys. But I still think while there's Hedman and Jones in the East, there's a chance it stays in the more populated time zone.
Berkey.
Yeah, Elliot, let's talk about last night's game. What did you like? What did you see? What do you think is going forward? Where are we going with this series?
I just would like it to stop for ratings purposes, Berkey, that you can turn off the TV after the first goal is scored. you know, I'd like something a little bit more back and forth. Like, you and I were talking about this last night. Like I thought last night's game was a good game. I thought it was energetic. It was competitive. I thought it was better than the first game. But, you know, it's like Dallas is they're a low event team. Not a lot seems to happen when they play. I think Vegas really tries to push the pace. I think they really like to do things. Dallas, I think they want to grind you. They want to slow the game down. It's like 1950s style football, right? 3 yards in a cloud of dust. But boy, those games are competitive, man. Those two teams, like, Dallas really grinds you. You can see the welts that they put on you and things like that. And with Vegas last night with Reeves back in, they're able to handle it. I think that's a really, really tough, intense series. And it's going to be a long one. Like, whoever gets out of there, they're going to be beaten up a bit to get to play for the Stanley Cup. No question.
Elliot, I realize it's a little bit off topic here, but we spent more time on the draft than I anticipated, so I want to make sure I get to ask you about Steven Stamkos and what is going on with him, because he doesn't come up at all. Like, it's amazing with this Tampa team that one of the best players being not there is kind of a side story. Yeah, we'll see him after the series. Do we know what the injury is, what he's doing right now, a potential timeline? Like, I know they said he won't play in this series, but like I tend to be skeptical of those sort of things. What's going on there?
This is what I've kind of heard happen there. Like, Stamkos had core surgery in March. Like, everybody knows that. And,
right,
you know, he is quoted, if you go back through the internets, Justin, there are quotes from him around the beginning of training camp, the resumption of play, that had him say that he thought he was going to be okay and he was going to be able to play. I had heard, and I have heard, that sometime around, like, just before stage three began, which was the training camps, he aggravated the injury somehow. Like, I haven't really been able to get a lot of details, but that's one thing I had heard, that the injury got aggravated somehow. I don't think he was doing anything, like, illegal or anything like that. I think it was just in the process of normal preparation or working out, that he aggravated it and set him back. And, you know, like, one of the things I think that's made this, and so there's a blackout, and Tampa's not an organization that gives you a lot of information to begin with, and now they're being really tight on it. And one of the things that's kind of been around the periphery of this is that it's not always easy to get personal medical care outside of team medical care while you're in the bubble. And I think that's also kind of been a bit of an issue. So, I you know, obviously the injury is bad enough that he can't play. John Cooper has pretty much said, don't ask, I'll tell you when something changes. But I think there was an aggravation of the injury. And I think it's also been... it's tough to get exact information, but one of the things that's kind of been heard out there is that, you know, Stamkos, like, to see some of the people that he likes to see, it's not always easy with the bubble. So I think that that's kind of a problem here too.
Okay, let's see if I can join a couple of these conversations between the draft and the Tampa Bay Lightning. One of the points that I was trying to make here on the program yesterday, Friege, was one of the most remarkable things to me, and this is a tip of the hat to their head of amateur scouting, Al Murray. One of the things that is interesting to me is how you look at that forward group, and with Steven Stamkos out, they're doing all of this without any first-round picks in the lineup. Like, there are no first-rounders. It really is remarkable what Tampa is able to do here. It's a couple of things. One, it's identification. The really good drafting record. It's the development as well. The battery between Syracuse and Tampa has been electric, both from the player point of view and the coaching side of things as well. When you look at this Tampa team, and we all know the cap issues are going to befall this team at the end of whenever their season ends here. What impresses you the most? Because to me, one of the things that really stands out is all this great offense and creativity, and you can't find a first rounder in the forward mix.
You know what it says to me, Jeff? And like, to me, I think this is the case for any successful company. It's stable. That they have stability from the top on down. They have a plan and they execute their plan. And, you know, they use their advantages. Number one, tax-free state. So, you know, like, they. Number two, it's a player that play. It's a place that players want to play. Okay, so they have these things, built-in advantages, and they use them to their advantage. So yes, some players take less money. Now, they're going to have a challenge now because, you know, with Cirelli and Sergachev and eventually Point going to be up for new contracts, they're going to have to make some moves because these guys are all going to get raises, and some of the guys they might want to move have no trade or no move clauses. So that'll be a delicate dance. But in the short term, what it allows you to do is fit a team together at a place where players want to play. And also, like, they believe in drafting and developing, and they do it. They have a really good, as you mentioned, they have a really good setup in the American Hockey League with Syracuse. They make sure that players are developed there properly. Yanni Gourde went from a nobody to a really wanted NHL player, for example. I remember, Justin, I think I remember you telling me years ago that watch out for this guy who nobody knows about. When he becomes a free agent, everyone's going to want him. And then Tampa made sure that never happened.
I know. The Leafs made him an offer years ago. I know that.
Yeah, they liked him. And, you know, like, to me, like, they have a plan and they execute their plan. And they don't, and everybody is like, what's the old line? You plan, God laughs. Mike Tyson, everybody has a plan until you get punched in the face. Mm. Well, whatever happens, they're like, okay, this happened. Now we have to get back to the plan. And I think that's why their organization is successful.
Berkey, last one to you, if you're still awake.
I wanted to ask a quick question, Elliot. You know what's odd? We do all this preparation for the draft with 18-year-olds, and we have a certain success rate, which is not impressive, by the way, even in first-round picks. And set, by the third round, you're at 15%, I think. The NFL, which drafts 23, 24-year-olds if they redshirt, doesn't do a whole lot better than we do.
Really?
On a sport that lends itself to film and video review, they actually have an astonishing miss rate, too, because I've studied very closely what the Indianapolis Colts did. What's your thinking on that? Should the draft age go up?
You know, I do think it should. Like, if I was a team, I would want that, right? And I know that's something that's kind of been discussed. You know, Pat LaFontaine was the guy who kind of put that at the forefront of the NHL. And, like I think one thing is going to happen, and Jeff, you're much more in tune to this than I am, is I think there could be some huge changes to junior hockey in this country.
Yep.
And, you know, one of the things that the NHL kind of threw at the GMs a few years ago, Berkey, was the idea of a change. A 19-year-old draft, 18-year-olds only in the first round, but sort of tying the NCAA, the CHL, the USHL all together. Could USHL teams compete for the Memorial Cup, like that kind of thing? And it was out there a few years ago, and it kind of went away. But if I was a team, I would want anything that I thought gave me a chance to draft better.
I think that, honestly, I think that a couple of things here. I think the idea of an older draft, but still an 18-year-old draft for the first round is something that'll have concert. And the other one, when you consider, players outside of the CHL can do this, I think we might, and I know junior hockey operators are going to scream when they hear this, but the hue and cry has been out there, and it ratchets up every now and then. 19-year-old CHL players in the American League. For kids that have outgrown the CHL and are ready for a pro challenge, but not at the NHL level yet, those tweeners that they talk about, I can see something like that happening on the horizon too.
Yeah, that would kill the CHL and teams.
They would not like that. Yeah, I don't disagree. I just know that that's always been out there and that drum has been banged for a while now. Friege, excellent stuff. Back to your force plate investigations, and we'll talk to you on the podcast soon.
Okay, you can wake up now, Berkey.
There he is from 31 Thoughts, Elliot Friedman. Guys, when we come back, some really interesting comments yesterday. We get on the Vancouver Canucks page. Some interesting comments yesterday by general manager Jim Benning about the future of this organization after all the successes that they enjoyed this season and what a year it was to be a Vancouver Canucks fan. Jim Benning comments on the future of Jacob Markstrom and also the disappointment in his mind that was Jake Virtanen. Stay tuned. More Hockey Central in moments. You're listening to Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday starting at noon. It is Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Brian Burke and Justin Bourne. Guys, some interesting comments yesterday from Vancouver Canucks general manager Jim Banning. And boy, does he have some decisions ahead of him. We'll play a couple of things. One from the postseason media conference, and then a couple from Sportsnet 650, where the Vancouver general manager was on Reach Deep. First of all, get your thoughts on this one. Have a listen. This is Jim Benning on the future of Jacob Markstrom.
Well, like I said earlier, it's nice to have two good goalies. You know, we're going to, you know, sit down, like I said, as a group, and we're going to talk about that some more this week. I talked to Jacob's agent yesterday, and, you know, we would still, you know, Jacob's an important guy in our group because he's a leader, you know, and he was our MVP over the course of the regular season. So we're going to try to figure out a way, you know, that makes sense for us and that makes Jacob and his agent happy to try to figure out a deal to get him signed. We want him back. And we're going to start working on that this week.
All right, Brian, we'll start with you. Put on your general manager decoder ring here. What is Jim Benning trying to tell us and the player? And how do you see things ending with Vancouver and Markstrom?
Well, Jim Benning played for me. I had him when I was an assistant GM. I had him in Vancouver and in Milwaukee in the IHL. And it's funny, we did a little bit about Pete DeBoer playing on that 90-91 team last night, and Jim Benning was on that team. And Jim Benning's an honest guy. Like, I think there's a lot of GMs who can speak truthfully and forcefully, and there's some guys who can say it like lawyers and kind of give you never an inaccurate answer, but not a completely truthful answer either. And just a lawyer's answer, what I call it, is you answer the question, you don't lie, but you don't set it straight. I don't think he does that. I think he's unfiltered. He's a very honest person. And I think the simple fact is, with Jacob Markstrom, he was their MVP. They're not in the playoffs without him. And they need him. Thatcher Demko turned in three great performances. Good for him. Mm-hmm. But you remember Jim Carrey? You remember Steve Penny? Guys that had brief and spectacular careers as goalies. This is not a body of work. You can't judge this. In fact, you look at Binnington this past season, I thought he struggled all year. His numbers are terrible. So, okay, they need Jacob Markstrom back. What Demko did, in my mind, is change the term and change the wages that will be due to Jacob Markstrom. I think that he's going to get less money for a smaller number of years than he would, or else I think in that case, if he says, no, I got to get paid, I need 4 years, I need $7 million, then I think they're going to look outside. There's a pretty good goalie market this year.
It is fascinating to think that while Markstrom's on the bench watching Demko play well, like how much was changing in his bank account? Because realistically, as Berkey put it, it might have cost him $10 million if that guy played three good games. Who knows?
He will be looking for term. He will be looking for money. How important is expansion draft protection here, Brian?
Well, I just met. I went in for the date when they had the big thing for the Twins. I went in and I met Jacob Markstrom. He stepped out on the corridor to say hi to the Twins, not to say hi to me. But he stopped and very gracious. And I talked to him a little bit last night, actually. Great guy and very popular teammate. They need to re-sign him. They can't go in with one goalie, and they can't go in assuming that Thatcher Demko can shut people out for, you know, 57 minutes every night. So I think what Justin just said is true, but they need him back, and I think they'll get something done. I'm not sure how all this ties together, Jeff. I don't think anyone is. Like, what is Pietrangelo going to get? What's Krug going to get? What is the COVID impact on the marketplace? Nobody knows till people start signing. And it's going to be severe, in my view. There's going to be less term. There's going to be less dough per year. I think it's going to impact immediately. Now, the good news for the players is you only need one idiot owner. And as long as you got one idiot, you're okay.
Someone needs that guy to go first.
31. Yeah. You did mention that Milwaukee team, by the way, Brian, that 90-91 team. And, you know, back in those days, I was sort of used to having, you know, two gunslingers on each team. But this squad had Sean Antoski, Gino Ogic, Cam Brown, Craig Cox. Like, this was a rock and roll team. Todd Hawkins on that squad as well. Like, how long did these games take?
We talked about it last night. I'm sorry for the people who are listening. I texted Jeff about this. We talked about it last night, and Peter DeBoer was on that team. He was the assistant captain on that team. The other assistant captain was Jack Capuano, who has been an NHL head coach and is currently an assistant coach with the Ottawa Senators. Peter Bukovic was our captain. Mike Murphy, who's had a great career, was our head coach. Jim Benning was on that team. Steve Weeks was on that team, who ended up being a goalie coach. Who else? Bob Mason was on that team, who's still a goalie coach with the Wild. I mean, you look at, you think Pat Quinn could identify character people? I mean, but the games were horribly long. We had, we played in Indianapolis that year. I'll never forget this. I talked to Mike Murphy or texted with him about it yesterday. We're playing in Indianapolis. Dominic Hasek's rookie year. He's playing for Indy. And Pat Quinn says to me, take a look at this goalie. He's supposed to be a hot shot. So came over with the Chicago Blackhawks. So we have a meeting. We're getting players suspended right and left. So I have a meeting with the players before the game. I said, this has got to stop. We want to fight. We want to be tough, but we got to be smart. We're not smart. So the game starts, and I think I've just made this point. I'm this great speaker. I gave this great speech. They're all going to behave. And we have a power play, and Sean Antoski, his job on the power play is to float inside the attacking blue line while we break out. So he pins one defenseman by the bench, and then he drifts back out over the blue line as the play comes up. Well, the defenseman for Indy thinks he's safe and cross-checks Anton, gives him a really good cross-check, and jumps into the bench. Oh. Anton steps into the bench, steps right through the door into their bench, grabs him by the throat, drags him back out on the ice, and kicks the snot out of him. Now Dave Mackey starts fighting with someone. Next thing you know, we got four guys ejected of the five guys on the ice. Unreal
that
team.
Was one of the most interesting squads in the International Hockey League at that point. And you want to throw in coaches. Steve McEachin as well was a goaltender on that team.
McKeegan, yeah.
Who went on to coach with the Marlins. Was the Maple Leafs goalie instructor for a couple of years. Throw him into the mix. All right. We get good stories. Let's get back to Vancouver and Jim Benning. So,
here's we can't talk about fights anymore?
Well, listen, I would love to. I'd love to turn the whole thing into fights. We can find out about Justin Bourne and David Pochesny once upon a time. But we will move on. Okay, moving out money. Okay? So we all know that Vancouver is, like many teams, in a salary cap situation. Here's Jim Benning on Reach Deep on Sportsnet 650 yesterday addressing the issue.
Well, Jim, looking ahead to next year, and I know there's financial uncertainty given what's going on with the pandemic and from a league-wide perspective as well with a flat cap, but, you know, looking at your roster, are you looking at potentially moving out some money here in the next month or so?
Yeah, I am. I am. I'm going to, you know, I've already started talking to GMs on the weekend. I've had a couple calls this morning. I'm going to continue to touch base with, you know, all the GMs in the league and, you know, just try to figure out what the marketplace looks like and if we're able to move money out and, you know, what it looks like. And I'm going to be active in that market if we can be.
Morning, let's get your thoughts on this one. How difficult will it be to move out money? We all know the likely candidates. I mean, Louis Erickson is Exhibit A. There's still, you know, 2 years at $6 million a copy there. How difficult a job is that going to be for Vancouver?
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, what's so hard about it is just there's so many teams that have that on their plate this summer, you know, trying to find that space and, you know, bring it back to Toronto here. That's part of the deal with Kapanen, right? Is, okay, well, we just need to give ourselves a little bit of a buffer. So this comes back to the advantage that teams have who have cap space, who have some flexibility, their ability to take on money and to pull additional assets from teams for that favor it seems like a huge leverage this offseason. More so than any season in the past.
So maybe then, further to Justin's point, Brian, if you're Jim Benning and you're looking to move, let's just say Louis Erickson and his contract, which is sizable, as we all know, do you have to attach a premium to it? And how quickly are you calling the Detroit Red Wings?
Well, they have no first and no second, and the Maple Leafs gave up a first to dump Marlowe's contract. So I don't know how Benji, and sorry, Jim Benning, when he played for me, we call him Benji. I don't know how Benji does that without a first or a second. Mm-hmm. Like you're talking, like what Justin just said, I think is very understated. I think you're going to get a massive premium if you take on money now. And this is how Seattle's going to really hit home runs in the expansion draft, is by taking on money and saying, okay, I'll take that guy, but I need a first and a second in the next 2 years. A first next year and a second the next year. Like, you're going to see staggering prices paid. Wow. Because that GM and that owner want to win now, and they don't really care if the next GM gets hamstrung.
And we don't even know. Here's another thing. We're just assuming that Vancouver is going to spend to the cap. Brian, you've made this point before. I don't think we should assume that of any team, except maybe the Maple Leafs.
No, these owners, their core industries have been decimated. Like, yeah. We're very fortunate in Canada. We don't understand the extent of the economic damage south of the border. We do not understand the toll that this pandemic has taken south of the border, where so many people are out of work, or if they're in a two-income home, they lose one income. Our industry is like the first thing that gets cut when a family sits down at the kitchen table and the mom lost her job, and they're trying to figure out how we do the budget. Guess what? The first thing they cross off with a pencil is tickets to pro sporting events. Second thing is vacation. And so you can go camp at a state park. You may not go to Mexico. So to me, we are way more fragile in tough economic times than we think. And until there's a vaccine, people aren't going to come back in big numbers. So there's going to be impact here. If you look at the Pegulas in Buffalo, their core business is natural gas. Guess what? Look up the prices there. Mm-hmm. Tom Gilardi in Dallas, core business, hospitality and hotel, restaurants. Look that up. See how that's doing. So we're going to see teams that do not spend anywhere near the cap.
Don't be surprised if some big-name teams don't use the cap as a magnet. Borny, I want to get your thoughts on this one. We'll get to you here first. This is Jim Benning, further yesterday on Sportsnet 650, talking about Jake Virtanen and his future in Vancouver, if indeed there even is one. Here's Jim Benning.
Well, I thought he worked and competed hard in the playoffs. He scored, that big goal for us in game six. To be perfectly honest with you, though, I was expecting more from Jake in the playoffs. Like, he can skate. He's strong. He can get to the net. He's a guy that we're going to have to talk about here moving forward. We've been patient with him and his development. But he's a guy that, I was expecting, to produce more for us. So, those are the types of decisions that, we're going to have to make here going forward.
Okay, Borny, see Brian Burke's previous comments about no filter on Jim Benning. Your thoughts on his thoughts on Jake Virtanen?
I think Jake Virtanen's probably going to be a pretty good buy-low candidate for someone. It's just the Vancouver thing, I think they've been really frustrated by him. And even when he was in Utica years ago, the frustration has just been that he can do it all. He's big, and he can skate well, and he can get to the net. And Benning mentioned all those things, but he doesn't.
Shoot.
And at some point, that seems to be a deficiency on the player's part that's kind of between his ears or just in his general makeup as a person, that he doesn't, he's not someone who's naturally grit his teeth, angry, competitive, and, that sort of intrinsic engine doesn't seem to be there for him. I don't think that comes from any players. So if the Canucks have lost their patience with that, I wouldn't be surprised. At the same time, he could help someone out in the bottom of their roster, but it does feel like they're pretty frustrated there in Vancouver.
Has he played his last game, you think, Brian, in Vancouver?
No, I don't think it's reached that point. I think he's an enigma, because what you guys just said is all true. He's got all the tools, but somehow the toolbox isn't something you can carry around into an arena. He can skate, he can shoot, he can actually fight.
Yep.
Like, he can do everything. He's got a hard shot. He's actually a good person. but he's not competitive enough, and he's not focused enough in games. And he does not put those tools to use. You see flashes of brilliance. He had 18 goals, could add 40. So I think the issue will be, what does he think 18 goals earns him? And if that's not a reasonable number, then yes, he's played his last game. But I don't think they're there yet.
Interesting comments, both from Jim Benning and our crew here today. We'll step away. A little bit more Hockey Central here in a couple of moments. Smith and Jones, top of the hour, and then Baseball Central. But we'll finish off Hockey Central here in a couple of moments. Preview tonight's matchup. We expect a much different affair between Tampa and the New York Islanders. Don't expect a blowout tonight, folks. Hockey Central continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Top of the hour, Smith and Jones. After that, Baseball Central. Meanwhile, finish up Hockey Central here. Tonight, one game on the board. Tampa leads their series against the Islanders 1-0. One game, the only game, was a blowout. 8 o'clock Eastern, this game gets underway. Justin, I don't think we're expecting a blowout tonight. What should we be expecting, though?
Well, to be honest, I mean, even if the Islanders are better and the Lightning are worse, you still feel like the Lightning are going to have a leg up. I just don't think it's a great matchup at this point in the playoffs for the New York Islanders. It's just, you know, Tampa has proven they can beat heavy defensive teams. The Islanders don't score a ton as is. I still think Tampa comes out on top. Listen, I love my Islanders, but it's tough for me to look at this matchup and think they have any kind of advantage here.
What do you think, Berkey? This is the traveling all-star team that is the Tampa Bay Lightning facing off against the hard-working defense-first Islanders.
Well, teams that rely on structure and systems, they can get back in sync a lot quicker than freewheeling teams. I expect a very different game tonight.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's looking at a blowout. I want to thank Elliot Friedman from 31 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada for stopping by. I hope you enjoyed the program today. Lots of intriguing talk about hockey and force plates, as you heard off the top with Elliot. So we mentioned Smith and Jones, top of the hour, Baseball Central, still to come. Enjoy the game tonight. Pre-game starts at 7:30. Your host, Ron McLean, that is Hockey Central on Sportsnet. And then tonight, it is the Islanders and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Don't expect a tilted rink. Just cross our fingers. This is a good one. We'll talk to you. More Hockey Central tomorrow at noon.